Welcome to the Your Home Podcast, brought to you by O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house.
And welcome along. Yes, it is the Your Home Podcast, a monthly real estate industry check-in brought to you by, of course, our friends at O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house. And so much happening in the world of real estate, the industry that everyone is involved in some way or another. I'm producer Jane Neild, and I'm joined by Stavros Ambazidis, one of the co-directors at O'Brien Real Estate, who has a very interesting black book full of all sorts of people, including celebs. And look, some of our past guests on the show, Stav, well worth going back and listening to. Some great feedback on George Cullenbaris and Andrew Bogut. So if you're new to the podcast, welcome, but go back in the Your Home feed and have a listen to some of our past guests. I'm looking forward to our chat with our guest today, Fred Harrison, the CEO of Richies. Before we get to that, Stav, welcome to the show. And tell me, did you manage to squeeze in a couple of open inspections in Byron Bay when you were there for your daughter's engagement? Because I can't imagine you having a weekend off, not doing auctions, and not having a bit of a sticky beak at the real estate market in Byron.
Well, it was quite interesting, Jane. We did get to Byron Bay for my daughter's engagement party, and we did have plans to look at property. But with lots of my cousins and uncles and aunties that visited from Victoria migrated up for the engagement party, and then we brought in several dozen breakable plates so we could have a real party. So we had a huge engagement party. Most people thought it was a wedding. Byron Bay seen nothing like it. There was so many Greeks there. And the Beachy Hotel, which is across the road from where we had the party, asked us to keep it down because we were that loud. But it was a big fat Greek engagement party, and we've got the wedding next year. So thanks for asking.
Oh my goodness, pace yourself for the wedding. I mean, did you see many for sale signs up around Byron? We are hearing reports that things are easing a little in that part of the world and interest rates, going up at least on hold for a little while. But did you sort of notice?
There was, and we saw a lot of properties up in the hinterland that have become available. There's a couple of little estates up there. Where it's just land on 2.5-3 acres, but there's a lot going on in the hinterland area, anywhere within half an hour outside of Byron. It's becoming very popular, and a lot of Byron residents are moving out into that sort of land holding rather than being in that busy bustle and hustle, because only one road in, one road out of Byron, and the locals don't really like it that much when it gets touristy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? What you love is what everyone else grows to love,
right.
And then you're whinging about the tourists.
Yeah.
So interesting. Okay, well, let's introduce our guest today. Stav, I might get you to set this up because this man, look, on every level, where we choose to spend our money in a community, who we choose to support business-wise and what we choose to feed our family with and put on our plate and spend our household budget on has a huge impact in our lives and the lives of our local community and, the way that we can support businesses. And I'm interested to talk to Fred Harrison, the CEO of Richies, about his business philosophy as well. I'm sure there must be a real estate link here somewhere. So how far do you and Fred go back?
Well, we do go back a fair way. And one thing you'll find out about Fred, he's probably one of the loveliest, humblest leaders in Australia. He was often seen on the Today Show over the COVID period, where he was giving advice and speaking on the supermarket and the food industry.
Yeah, when we couldn't even get toilet paper and people were freaking out because suddenly we didn't have mass amounts of imports coming into the country.
No, and he had a lot of insight on that, but he is one of the nice, it ticks every box as a human being. We go way back, but prior to me meeting Fred, my wife used to work at Richies in Aspendale. She was one of the first staff members there in their Richies bottle shop. But the only blemish he has is that he's a Collingwood supporter. Apart from that, he ticks every box. So welcome, Fred.
Thank you. What a nice drum roll.
Look, Fred, the story of Richies and then your involvement in it, I mean, it's, been there for so many generations, the largest independent licensed supermarket group in Australia, employing now 6,000 or so people with nearly 80 stores countrywide and more of them being added to the group. So you must be a very busy man. For the fact that you've got half an hour to come and chat to us, we are very, very grateful. Fred, can I take you back to where you grew up before you became became CEO of a massive company and a very important person on the Australian business landscape. What are your first memories of home? What kind of home did you grow up in? And what do those memories bring back for you about your early family years?
Yeah, look, that's well summarised. I do remember my early days. We lived in places like Aspendale at one stage and Cheltenham before moving to Frankston. Dad was a school teacher in the tech industry at that stage. They don't have tech schools anymore, but a tech teacher and travelled around, and he was based in Frankston for a number of years. So I do remember my early years in Frankston, and I remember getting a big promotion, and we had to pack up and head down to your lawn down in Gippsland. And we were down there for about 4 years. And they were, I would say, looking back on it, they were the best fun years of my life in your lawn. Gippsland was a great spot. And unfortunately, we had to pick up and move when the state government, because it was a state government controlled town, decided they were going to dig up the town and turn it into a coal mine because they were convinced there was a heap of coal under the town. And I remember very proudly, as a probably 8, 9, 10-year-old, walking up and down the main streets of your lawn with all the television stations down there with placards protesting, saying, save your lawn, save your lawn. We failed. It did get put into a coal mine. And years later, they established and came clean and said, guess what? No coal was found under the town. They buried a perfectly good town.
Oh, so the house that you have memories of there probably didn't exist for very much longer.
No, literally the whole town was buried. And we had Olympic-sized swimming pools. We had theatres. This is, you know, back in, I'm going back into the late 60s, early 70s. We had multiple football ovals, cricket ovals, tennis courts. You could have grass or you could have the synthetic courts. It was just a sensational town. And a lot of the people who lived there worked in the coal mines or teachers. There was a small retail precinct. I remember I was doing paper rounds down there. My job was the paper round, and I'd get up at 5 o'clock. And this is as a, you know, I was 9, 10, 11. Hard to believe. And when you wouldn't do it these days, parents wouldn't allow their kids to do it. But I was down to the coal mines selling the, well, it wasn't called the Herald Sun back then, but I remember we were selling the truth and the best bets. And you learn a lot as a young kid reading the truth.
Mate, you've always had a great work ethic. Yeah, where does that come from?
Look, that's a good question. I think I'm one of four kids. Dad being a teacher, Mum didn't work, particularly when we had the four kids. So Dad worked hard. I mean, he was a teacher, but that doesn't mean he had 12, 13 weeks holiday. In school holidays, he would go and work on building sites to raise money. So he was working two or three jobs all the time. So I grew up with a dad who was kind of permanently working. So I suppose you become culturally accustomed to your work and work hard. So I started at an early age, and I've always just worked, you know, 6 days in retail, long days and long nights. And it's just something that has been ingrained into me from early years.
Now, I have the story, you know, if you Google yourself, Fred, the story is that you went from a trolley boy to the CEO of Ritchie's. But in fact, I have learnt that you even earlier had an association with Ritchie's, which was when you grew produce in your backyard in Frankston, was it, and then sold it to the local supermarket. I mean, that just blows my mind that, A, you're not Greek and that sounds like something Stav and his mates would do, and but B, that you had the foresight as a child, like your dad wasn't a market gardener. It wasn't like you were just kind of picking a couple of extra things from his rows, that you actually could see there was a potential there to do some work, grow some produce and sell it locally. That is incredible.
Well, Mum and Dad always shopped at Ritchie's in Thompson Street, which was one of our original stores, really back from the 1950s. And I'd go in often with Mum and Dad, and I was always impressed by the fresh produce department, you know, just how colourful and how many different fruits and vegetables they were. And I said to the fruit and veg guy, and I was only 14 at the time, that if I was to buy fruit and veg or produce fruit and veg at home, would he buy it off me? And look, you know, he probably thought I'd do it for a week or two and give up. But I actually locked in with him and delivered I won't say weekly, but certainly every second week for virtually 3 years. And I used to deliver things like apple cucumbers, passion fruit, silver beet, radishes, tomatoes. So I'd pick it at home on a Thursday night, get home from school, and then prepare it. Dad would drop me down to Thompson Street on the Friday. I'd take my wares in, and I always seemed to end up with $20. I'd get a petty cash voucher for $20. I'd walk around onto Nepean Highway where the office was, hand in my petty cash voucher, get given my $20. And look, I, again, one of four kids, that's how I funded buying my tennis rackets, my tennis ball, my shorts, my runners. I basically self-funded my tennis years back then. So, and it was really only when I was into it 3 years, the boss of Richie's, the owner of Richie's, met me one day in the back of produce, bringing in my produce. And he said to me, "Fred, you look like an industrious young boy. Why don't you come and work for us?" And I must admit, I was probably doing it for 3 years at this stage, 16, and it wasn't really cool to be packing produce and delivering it. So I took him up on the offer, and anyway, started as a casual while I was at Frankston High at the ripe old age of 16. And the plan was to stay at Richie's until I worked out what I wanted to do, and I'm close to working it out, I reckon, 48 years later. Yeah.
It's not often you see such longevity in this day and age in one workplace. You know, what's the secret to that success? You've been there for 48 years. What is that secret?
Look, that's a great question. And I often ask myself, because, you know, my son, for example, was a lawyer, and he did very well and has done very well for himself. But he had probably worked for five or six legal companies within his first 8 or 9 years. And I'm saying, you know, why are you doing this? Why aren't you staying at the one company? He said, no, Dad, you got it wrong. You got it wrong. It's really good. You've got to get experience, and you've got to go and work in different companies, and they love it on your CV when you've worked in all these different companies. And I threw my hand in the air and said, gee, if I was like that, I would have had 100 jobs by now. But look, it's a change. I think that I made a decision that I wanted to be an independent retailer. I mean, I never seriously put a lot of time and effort into buying my own store. I came in, and over the years I've acquired shares, purchased shares. So I'm a, you know, significant shareholder in the company now, and that's all been self-done. But I think I wanted to work with the independents, where there were less rules and there was more creativity, as opposed to working for the big public company where it's very sterile, very formularized. And I won't say you're treated as a number, that's not quite fair, but it is a bit more of a dog-eat-dog mentality in those sorts of organizations, where in Richie's and independents generally, you can blossom and develop your own culture and write the rules as you go. That appealed to me more than having to go to an organisation and just administer the rules of the day.
Now, you're completely entrenched in your local community, not just in Mount Eliza on the peninsula, but, you know, several years back there was an event that happened called the Black Saturday Fires, Jane, and I remember going to a wedding. We were invited to a wedding. It was a Saturday, and we stopped at Richie's in Yarra Glen. It just opened, and I think 3MP might have been there. They had the little caravan at the front. Is that right, Fred?
3AW.
They had the little...
Tom Elliott was broadcasting the Saturday afternoon show.
That's right. And I remember going in to buy a few essentials before we went to our room and get ready. And later that afternoon, who would have thought we would have had the Black Saturday, and the venue that we were at, which was Immerse, got burnt down.
Really?
Yeah, so half the guests ended up going to Yay, the other half ended up going back to Yarra Glen. But I'll never forget Fred opening up the brand new Richie's store, and it was pristine, brand new. He opened it up to all the public, the residents, pets, and he had, you know, people were grabbing things off the shelves. I remember Xenia, my wife, just buying a brand new camera at the time, and she took several photos. But you've done so much for the local communities. That's just one example of what you've done. You've also got you've got the community benefits card, which then benefits back into the community for every spend that you do, goes back to the community. And, you know, that's really you know, it's a credit to you, to be honest, Fred. The other thing that I was going to point out, there's a book I'm reading at the moment called People Follow People, and Fred touched on it. Loyalty comes before opportunity, where the young people don't have that these days. As you were saying, your son's a lawyer and he's worked in five different places. But one thing that Fred has is loyalty and sees it through. So, you know, what made you get so entrenched into communities, Fred? Because that's something that really stands out.
Yeah, and what you said about the fire was right. We became the safety house up there, and the whole community came in, and we probably had 600 people in the shop and another 600 people in the car park. And we opened up the shop and said to everyone, hey, guys, gals in the store, take what you like off the shelf. Go to the deli if you want ham and cheese sandwich and a bit of salami, help yourself. So we did feed the community. We fed the whole fire brigade. And look, I suppose events like that really make you understand that at the end of the day, we are part of the community. We are feeding a community. We're not rocket scientists. We're not, you know, inventing new medicines or whatever. We have a service to look after and nourish the community. And I think when you work in a supermarket environment and spend the time I did on the shop floor, you soon realise you meet all sorts of people. It's not you meet the rich, you meet the famous, but you also meet a lot of people who are old, who are frail, who have very few friends, who may not be that well off, but you know they are community. They've done lots of good things in their life. So I've always been humbled by our customer base, and we've always had the view that where we can, we'd like to give back. And the Richie's card, the community benefit card, is a good example of that. Now we've donated $53 million cash back to clubs, schools and charities. And on top of that, we've probably donated another $6-8 million into different sponsorships, community events. We just truly believe that we are an extension of the community. We're lucky that we're in an industry where you have to eat, you have to drink. We happen to represent that industry. So the more we can give back to the community, the better. And look, we have, and that's another advantage of being a private company, worked off very humble margins for years and years and years. For the last, you know, apart from the last couple of years, our EBIT has been less than 2% each year. So, you know, we are a high turnover, low profit industry, but we do feel and value the work and the support we give the community.
You are listening to the Your Home Podcast. It is your monthly real estate industry check-in. Of course, thanks to O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house. And our guest today is Fred Harrison, the CEO of Richie's. Fred, I want to ask you about that because, you know, we won't focus so much on real estate today, but certainly the cost of living and, you know, can Australians still dream of owning a home? Is it going out the window with every interest rate rise that we see? It must break your heart a little, as you say, that you can see how important your stores are, and perhaps that one part of someone's day when they come in to make a purchase in your store is their human connection for the day. But it must break your heart seeing prices skyrocket. And I don't want to possibly point the finger at the major two, you know, supermarkets in this country, but when you mention that your actual profit margin is low, your turnover is high, I mean, I'm sure there are big supermarkets really, really cashing in on the cost of living crisis at the moment. Does it break your heart to see people struggling to fill up their trolley or to fill up their basket? Because I know my spending patterns have changed drastically and I've got a great job and I'm in a good position, but geez, it's hard when you go to the supermarket and see people putting things back, realising they just can't afford it.
Jane, you've summarised it beautifully there. That's exactly what we're facing right here, right now. I mean, look, we were very lucky. I would suggest to you that probably from about 2010 through to 2020, we lived in an incredibly stable period of time. Inflation was at 1.52, bad year was 2.5%. Manufacturers were often absorbing any increases in raw material product costs that were coming through. And I think we almost lived too well in that 10-year period. Of course, as long as come COVID, and it's almost been like a tsunami, and there have been so many little things go wrong and so many cost increases that perhaps in hindsight, if we did have more consistent cost increases over that 10, 12-year period, we may not have had to have the big cost increases that we're seeing now. And you're right, it's not one particular area. It's almost any item you put your finger on, the cost has gone up dramatically. Not only am I the CEO of Ritchie's, but I also work on the board of Pentel. Now, Pentel are an ASX-listed company. They have brands like White King, Lux Soap, Country Life, Jiffy, and they're a fantastic small Australian business. And I can see it from the other side, being on the manufacturing side, and it's, you know, tallow's gone up, and it's almost anything and every ingredient, a lot of it does come from overseas, and the increases haven't been 2, 3, 4%. Some of these increases have been 10, 15, 20%. Look, are people getting ripped off? Maybe I've got too good a view on the world. I think some of the increases we're getting now is almost an addition for what we haven't had, say, over the previous 8, 9, 10 years. And it's almost a massive catch-up and a correction. I think prices will subside. I think over the next 1, 2, 3 years, we'll see pricing drift back. Look, it'll never go back to where it was, but I wouldn't quite come out and say that there are people taking advantage. I certainly wouldn't speak ill of Woolies and Coles because they fundamentally have been hit with the increases that we have, and we've got our own increases that we've had to absorb in our business as well. Everything that consumers being hit with, we are too. For example, one of our biggest hits has been on rent. Most of our leases say that we increase our rents annually by CPI. Now, when CPI was 1 or 2%, easy to absorb, but now we're having to absorb 7% increases, 6% increases, and we're likely to get multiple years of it. And those increases in rent are there forever, and that's a massive increase to the cost of operating out of a building. So in many respects, it's unfortunate we're seeing these increases, but I think it is a little bit of a payback, if I can put it that way, for perhaps 10, 12 years of real stability.
Yeah, so it's compounding, especially the leases have really compounded significantly. We'll put a little bit of a real estate spin on this now. Fred, your son bought his first property recently and he bought it at auction, and you and I had a bit of a discussion about this. You know, what did he go through? Were you involved in that, in helping purchase that, in assistance with tips and advice?
Yeah, no, great question. And look, I have never, we've lived in, call it 8 different houses over our life, never purchased at a auction. We've always purchased privately. And it was an experience for me as well. So I did go along, and being his first house, and I know, you know, when you fall in love with a house, you can get very emotional about it. So I was there almost as the runner, just to make sure. And we spent a lot of time talking about what his limit was, and you know, I think young people always think they can afford a bit more than they really can, and they don't understand when it's your first house, all the bills that keep coming in and the repairs and maintenance that hit you and council rates. So I was there as not as a wet blanket, but just to make sure that
a leveler.
He didn't overextend. And look, he got the house. I would suggest he probably got the house $100,000 less than he thought his maximum price was. That was good. So now he wants to use, instead of, you know, taking a smaller loan, he says, no, I still want that extra $100,000. And he's now talking about putting a pool in. And I'm going, no, don't do pools yet. Just get in. Live in the house for a year so you have a full appreciation as to what it's like. I think don't go making big commitments until you've lived there for the 4 seasons. So hopefully I'm getting that message through. But it's a lovely house. He's acquired the house in Hampton, and he and his wife, Bonnie, are very excited about having their first house in such a lovely area.
I'm glad you said it was 100K under, because I was thinking, oh, how hard would it be if he just about got there and he had an auctioneer like Stav and he's like, come on, Dad, please, please, cash up just a little bit more. So it sounds like it was successful. Fred, yeah. What was the first house you actually bought? Did all the veggie growing and the paper runs and those jobs doing the trolley work at Richie's, did it all pay off and were you able to get into a market early or later in life?
Funny you should say that. I've only lived in a brand new house once.
Ah.
And as I said, I've been through 8 different houses. And that was my very first house. I actually, at the ripe old age of 18, when I was working at Richie's at that stage, a good colleague of mine who I played tennis with, who was a bit older than me, he would have been in his mid-30s. He was married, had some kids. We were playing doubles and singles in our Independence tennis team. We had our own club, our own team called Independence, and he had a block of land in Frankston, in the Trossachs of all places, up off Heather Hill Road in Frankston. He had a block of land and he said, Fred, really important that you knuckle down now that you've got a full-time job and buy some land. So I did. I went and got a loan off our Richie solicitor at that stage. He was our solicitor, but he also provided a loan. So I borrowed the money for the house. Barry was very generous in giving me a great price on the land, and I paid that off over 4 or 5 years. And then Denise and I got married when I was 24 and she would have been 21, and we built a house. And I remember going on our honeymoon, and we came back, and 1 week after we returned from our honeymoon, we moved into our brand new house in the Trossachs. And we were very excited. I mean, having a brand new house was, you know, I think every young person's dream at that stage. And we lived there for probably 4 years. And of course, along came children. And then we started to realize you needed the bigger backyard and more space and all this. And we ended up moving. But yeah, no, we really loved it. And I enjoyed having a brand new house. And you didn't have all the repairs and maintenance you do when you buy something that's been established a while.
A couple of questions for you. How much did you pay for the land?
$18,000.
$18,000. And the build, what did the build cost you?
I think it was $47,000. Now, I'm going a bit from memory, but I reckon all it was about $65,000 for the house and land.
Well, 47 grand wouldn't get you the slab these days.
No, that's right. And that was back in 1982. I think we moved in December 82.
That was a good little pocket up there. It's now called the Lakewood Estate and Frankston Heights off Heather Hill Road. But back then it all would have been paddocks.
Mm.
So,
Fred, have you got any advice before we let you go? You're a busy man. Do you have some advice, though, for perhaps, you know, someone who is in a position like you were? You've just gotten your first full-time job. You sort of mentioned there that perhaps young people these days might sort of think that they want a little bit more than they can afford. You know, how do you sort of encourage someone facing massive, massive costs of even getting into your first home to stay positive and maybe to start small and think of the future?
Yeah, and look, I think you're spot on. And this is a discussion I've had with Wayne. Wayne's 35 and this is his first house. And look, he's been to Italy 16, 17 times at the age of 35. Oh. I thought I was going well at 5 or 6, but the young people of today really seem to want to travel the world and then settle down and talk about marriage and kids from there. So I remember my dad used to say things like, oh, it was never like that when I was your age. I used to do this, that, and the other. And I always kind of vowed that I wouldn't do that to my own kids. But guess what? I do give all this advice to my own kids, whether they want it or not. But I think it is important owning a house. And it takes a long time. And I think, yes, you've got to set your sights a little lower. I think in this day and age, perhaps too many of us set our sights a little high and then get disappointed and frustrated. I think it is important that you have a budget. It's important that you plan. And this is not something you need to run off all the time and get financial advice. A lot of it is just common sense, sitting down and living within your means, but saying instead of paying rent, I'm not saying I'm right. I tend to think rent is, I won't say dead money because you need to live somewhere, but you're not ultimately renting all your life, you're not going to ever own anything. So I think if you can convert the rental money into buying your own house and maybe paying it off slowly over time is absolutely the right way to go. Now, I'm a bit old-fashioned, I'll say that, but look, it's certainly served Denise and I well, and we've been able to upgrade. And one thing's for certain, I mean, people talk about the stock market, people talk about property. I've dabbled in the stock market and done poorly. I find land is a great investment, and whilst it is always too expensive on the day you buy, when you look back, as we've just done now, to the land I paid back in back in the 70s, it was a cheap investment. And I think of all the investments you can make, house, property, land is the best investment.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. And
you need to set yourself up and plan from an early age. Get stuck into it. And look, you mightn't be off to Italy 16 or 17 times, but you will eventually be very proud and own your own house and land at some point.
Yeah, I remember my dad saying, you need to get a mortgage. You'll chew hard, but just go for it. Now, before we go, we do have a bit of a connection with Fred out in real estate. So Michelle Stevens is our superstar agent, number one agent in Victoria, and has won many Australian awards. And she fell in love with a young man that used to work at Richie's. And that used to be in Fred's office. And now Lenny works with us, married with Michelle. So we actually stole one of your great gems in Lenny Bellinger.
And when he first said it to me, I was really disappointed because Lenny was running our compliance and was a bit of a fresh, a fresh person coming in, new set of eyes, and did a fantastic job. And then when he explained that he was leaving to support his wife, I mean, I'm kind of saying, Lenny, mate, are you sure? Are you sure? And he was absolutely certain this is what he wanted to do. And I often ask Stav about Michelle and Lenny and how they're going. And I just think it is so great to hear how successful they've been, not just as in business, but they are husband and wife. And it just goes to prove that you can work together and have a great life. And I take my hat off to Lenny and Michelle. I mean, it's terrific all the awards they've won. And they're very inspirational stories because I know how hard they work. I remember you telling me, Stav, it's nothing for you to get a text on a Saturday night from Michelle saying she's just sealed a deal at an auction today and she was still working at 11 p.m.
Yeah, 11 12 p.m.
midnight. I mean, that's what you've got to do. I say to the younger people of today that, fine, you can go out and eat and drink plenty on a Saturday night, or you can do what Michelle and Lenny have done, and that's really work hard and try and set yourself up for the future. So I think those stories are really inspirational.
Oh, and is it true, before we let you go, Fred, that the man who is the CEO of Richie's used to live in a house on Coles Way?
Yeah, and that was very embarrassing. I think we were off Humphreys Road at that stage in Frankston in Civil Avenue, and my wife went looking for a house and she came back and told me, I found one. And I said, oh, whereabouts is it? And she explained it was behind Toorak College, and I said, oh, what's the name of it? And she said, Coles Court. I said, you've got to be joking, that I can't live in, you can't have the CEO living in Coles Court. And anyway, we went up and had a look at it. Number one, Coles Court it was. And it was, we fell in love with it. It was a relatively new house, only being lived in a very short period of time. And it was part of the Edgar Coles property. One street was called Edgar Close, the other was Coles Court. And we used to have Miss Coles, we referred to her as Miss Coles, who lived on the land, and she shopped with us at Richie's Mount Eliza, had an account, and she passed away, and the children got hold of all that land up there behind Toorak, and then subdivided and sold it all. So it was appropriate in some ways because she was a very loyal Richie's customer, Miss Coles, and I don't think she ever married. She was a miss. And anyway, we did live there for, I think it was about 8 or 9, or nearly 10 years actually, before we moved again into Mount Eliza. So, yeah, that was all part of the all part of where we lived, and it was a good joke at the time, but I'm glad moved on.
Oh, well, Fred, I think someone needs to name a suburb or an estate or perhaps a boulevard after you, because you are certainly, as Stav said at the beginning, I'll certify it for you now. You're a great bloke, and I feel very inspired to have been able to hear a little bit about your story and, of course, about a tough economic climate at the moment and get a little bit of inspiration to think, yeah, that hard work, it pays off for people like you especially. So thank you.
Thank you, Fred.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoyed it.
And that was Fred Harrison, CEO of Richie's, and of course, you know, the independent grocers who support the local community. So maybe if you've never shopped at Richie's, hunt them down, find them in your local area. Stav, thank you so much. You introduce us to so many amazing people here on the Your Home podcast. I just find that really inspiring, just to think that you can go from literally being a paper boy to growing vegetables for a supermarket to trolley boy to CEO. It's almost the Australian dream, isn't it?
It is. It is. And one thing about Fred, he's just such a great mentor, great person to talk to, and he's so humble, gives great advice. He thinks before he talks. So thank you, Fred, for coming on board. Now the pressure's on to find our next guest for next month.
Oh, well, hey, if you perhaps have any suggestions, if you'd like to get in touch with Stav, I saw you were recruiting for new people at O'Brien Real Estate socials the other day. Perhaps you have a property and you're thinking, oh, spring is just around the corner. Maybe we need to get an appraisal done. Maybe it's time to actually think about the next few months, the next few years. And I don't know, are people putting stuff on the market, Stav, or are we in a bit of a stalemate with the interest rates?
We are. And the problem is people aren't putting their properties on the market at the moment and because they're waiting for spring. But I always say it's best to sell in isolation rather than in competition in spring.
Before the rush.
So part of the reason we've got such huge clearance rates in auctions at the moment is because there's no stock but plenty of buyers. So people's situations don't change. It's the same situation today as it will be next month, the month after. So if you're looking at selling, put your house on the market today in isolation.
Interesting. Look, you can contact us here at the podcast, podcast@sen.com.au, or you can jump onto O'BrienRealEstate.com.au. I will put the links to Stav in our show notes. His mobile's there for anyone to give you a buzz at any stage. And please check in with us next time. Go back into the archive and listen to past episodes of the Your Home podcast. It is all thanks to O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house. Stav, thank you so much. And we'll
thank
chat
you, Jane.
To you in a couple of weeks.
Done. See you later.
Thanks for listening to the Your Home podcast, brought to you by O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house.